Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin.
Listen with Other, because grown-ups need story time too. The Mind Children by Giles Booth. Episode 2, The Playing Fields of England. Jenkins ran. Well, he was supposed to be running. It was cross-country running after all. But he was not following the approved route. He was running away. He'd been at Cabot College for less than a term, but he'd had enough. Enough of the cold showers, the sadistic teachers, the bullying from the rugby boys. He'd never been to a boarding school before. Never imagined he'd ever go to one until his father took a job in Hong Kong and his mother unexpectedly decided to follow him. He was devastated when they finally broke the news, dumped by his own parents. They were sport mad at Cabot College, and Jenkins hated team games. Running was the only activity he liked, especially cross country, as he could lose himself in solitude. Bagnall had spat in his soup the previous night. Everyone laughed. That was the last straw. He decided to run off course to the nearest village, Compton Magna. He wasn't sure what he'd do when he got there. Look for a friendly face, an old lady perhaps. Tell them his story. Throw himself on their mercy. He was well off the approved route now. He recognised the tower of St. Botolph's, the church in the village. They'd been there for Remembrance Sunday. His feet were caked in mud now from the footpath on the side of a ploughed field. Rain began to fall. He didn't care. Then he heard the hounds barking and howling. But it was Thursday. There surely couldn't be a hunt on a Thursday. The sound got closer. On and on he ran until he was on the very edge of the village. He could see cottages and cars and washing lines and normal life. Then they were upon him, mauling him, dragging him through the mud. They weren't hounds, though. They were big boys in rugby tops, howling and laughing and baying like dogs. "That's enough. Leave him now." They parted in silence. Mr. Houston, the headmaster, appeared between them and towered over Jenkins as he lay in the mud. "I think you'll come back to the college now. You'll be in detention for a week, and you'll be cleaning mud off the other boys' boots for the rest of term." A rugby player laughed. "Silence. You have no one to turn to, Jenkins. You'll come back now and submit to my authority." Jenkins started to cry. "Stop snivelling, boy." But in this terrible moment, Jenkins felt something strange come over him, like a warm hand or even a hug. He suddenly felt he was not quite alone after all. He looked up at Mr. Houston. The headmaster suddenly shivered, as if he too was having a visitation. On a roundabout in the village playground, the Mind Children span slowly, and nodding in unison, they smiled at each other. Welcome back to Tea Time TV Retro Machine. This week we're looking at the second Mind Children story, The Playing Fields of England. It's quite an opening, that, isn't it? One that really stuck in my mind. All comes flooding back hearing the novelisation. That's right, Bob. We're taking a deep dive into the story this week, although episode one managed to balance introducing the Mind Children, the exposition and a mystery plot quite well. It's episode two where we really get to know something about the aliens, and the story again shows their ambiguous nature. We know they're preparing to colonise Earth, but here we start to wonder if that might actually be a good thing. That's right. They clearly despise cruelty and injustice and take the side of a powerless young person against sadistic adult authority. And in a very satisfying way. Over the course of the story, each of the rugby players gets their comeuppance. One's reading a prayer in assembly and the Mind Children take control of him and he starts reciting a nursery rhyme. He has to be dragged off stage by the deputy headmaster. And another one wets himself as he stands up to say grace, in Latin, of course, at dinner. And finally, the headmaster, of course. Oh, boy. Yeah, that's a doozy. Again, this feels a bit extreme, even for the 1970s. How can we describe it, Bob? It's all about what's implied, not what's said explicitly, isn't it? At the time, I remember we were always being warned about stranger danger, but no one ever said why we shouldn't accept a lift from someone we didn't know. We were so innocent. Reading between the lines now, it's clear what the headmaster was up to. Is it, though? I think so. We only see a headline, Headmaster Resigns in Shame. But we know the Mind Children used psychic imaging to take photos remotely of him in his study. We only saw a blurry photo of him, though. I know, it's implied he was beating boys, but looking at it now, I think it's clear Damon Allen was suggesting he did more than just beat them. Which reminds me, any more leads on him? The trail went cold last week, but I've got another avenue to explore, let's just say that, and something even more exciting. Oh, what's that, Dave? Let's just say it involves something in a listener's loft. OMG, Dave. OMG indeed, Bob. The Mind Children jumped off the roundabout in unison and walked back to their den. The village telephone exchange was unstaffed, and although they could communicate telepathically from their respective adoptive homes, they'd found its disused workshop a useful meeting place. They could hear the ratcheting of the exchange equipment and tune in to the dozens of conversations carried through its wires and switches just as easily as they could read minds when in close proximity. They knew everyone's secrets, and everyone in the village had secrets. Although they'd arrived together, Matthew, Mark and Luke had very different human forms. Mark was the tallest, with thick, wavy, dark hair. Matthew was a bit shorter and stockier, with red hair and freckles. Luke appeared to be the youngest, with straight blonde hair. "We must do something to help that boy," said Luke. "We are not permitted to interfere with the course of human history unless the planet is threatened," said Mark. "But his pain and the injustice hurts me," said Luke. "You will grow out of this foolish phase," replied Mark. "I see no harm in helping him," interjected Matthew, who'd been listening in to the village bank manager arranging a date later that evening with the secretary at Cabot College. "Challenging the older generation, especially when it's behaving so badly, could be a useful social experiment. We will need to undermine authority when the time comes, and it would be helpful if we had the young on our side to fight the old order and help welcome our kind to their new home." "Very well," said Matthew. "What will we do?" asked Luke. "I think we will become day pupils at Cabot College," said Matthew. "How do we do that?" asked Luke. "The college secretary is going for a drink in the local pub tonight. We'll control her mind to accept us as new pupils and we'll plant all the relevant paperwork in her bag. Won't people at the college recognise us?" "College and village rarely mix. The teachers all live on site. Free accommodation is one of the perks, I think they call it." will be missed at the village school," said Luke. "We'll arrange it as an exchange. Say that the local education authority is keen to bring the best practice from fee-paying schools into the wider system," Matthew replied. And so the mine children infiltrated Cabot College. So there we have a scene where we learn a bit more about the three aliens. You can kind of see why people say the Mine Children was a rip-off of Village of the Dam, but I think this is one way in which it differed. Yeah, the three visitors do behave oddly. Hell, they're aliens after all. But they make an effort to make them look different. They're different ages even, not like the Midwich Cuckoos who all look the same and have blonde hair and were weird. And we loved playing at being the Mine Children, didn't we? God, yes, we did. My parents had an old caravan in the garden. That was our HQ. We pretended that was the telephone exchange. And I was Mark. I always wanted to be Mark. He was the oldest. He was the coolest and the best looking. Who played him? What actor? Can't remember. I can kind of see him in my mind's eye, but the book doesn't even have a cast photo on it. And there's no IMDb page for the Mine Children, is there? Extraordinarily, no. It really is the most lost of all TV shows. Until now. So anyway, I was left with being Matthew. And Luke? Yeah, Luke. Terry was always Luke, wasn't he? He was. Anyway.
Is your CRM secure? Is someone stealing your customers and contacts? Flange CRM now comes with its own VPN, keeping personal data safe. Visit flangecrmvpn.ai today and use code FLANGE26 for a 10% discount on your first week's subscription.
Hello?
Is that Polly? Polly Burrows? It's Dave Aston here.
Thanks for calling me back.
Your message said you had something to share with me. Something about stuff in a loft.
Yes, well, I'd suggest we meet, but you're in London, aren't you?
Yeah, but Bob's in Devon.
I'm in Stanton Maltravers. Right now, that is. I actually live in Bristol.
Oh, my goodness. Are you from the village? Do we have any mutual friends?
I doubt it. I never lived here. And I think I'm a fair bit younger than you. No offence.
None taken. So you heard the podcast then?
Yes. This is really awkward. I don't know if I should even be speaking to you.
That's okay. You take your time.
Well, Damon Allen, who wrote The Mine Children.
Yes.
Well, Damon Allen wasn't his real name.
It was a pen name?
Yes.
Why did he use a pen name? Was he shy? I always think if I ever get my book published, it's going to have my real name on it in big gold embossed letters.
He wasn't shy. He used a pen name to protect himself.
What from?
It was a different time. He had things he wanted to say. He used the Mine Children to try and right some wrongs.
Do you mind me asking what you're doing in Stanton Maltravers if you never lived there?
My grandfather, he died a year ago. My grandmother a year before that. My parents live in Australia now, so I'm finally clearing my dad's parents' house. Damon Allen was my great-uncle.
What? He lived in the village?
My grandparents moved to the village in the 90s.
Oh, I've moved to London by then. What about Damon Allen? Where did he live? What was his real name?
Graham. Graham Burrows.
That doesn't ring a bell.
He didn't live in the village, but he did live nearby. He was a teacher, a housemaster, at Mendip College.
Oh, my God.
There's more.
What?
I think he was murdered.
That was part two of The Mine Children, written, read and mixed by Giles Booth, with original music by Lee Sperry. Tune in next time when Bob and Dave explore the third story and pay a visit to Stanton Maltravers to explore Polly's great uncle's archive. Listen With Other is a GSB Radio Enterprises production.